one of the true old-timers of the country. And today is October 7, 1970, and we're at the University Library in my office. And so I've asked Ed Bialp to make some recollections of the early days and the founding of the university. Ed B., give us just a little history now. When, how did you come to the country here? What year did you come, and did you come with your parents? And give us a little bit of that.
Yes, I wish to thank Mr. Basham for asking to interview me. I was born in Seattle, September 18, 1894. And I was 76 years old on the 20th of September. And in the first place, there was a panic all over the United States when I was born. And in 1896, they struck gold in the Klondike, and at least 100,000 took it in. Not all in to Dawson, but scattered along the way. There was a Dyea Trail, the Edmonton Trail, way by Cordova, but the best way of all was by the way of St. Michael's and up to Dawson or White Horse, and you didn't have to soil your hands. But on account of this panic, my father took in the strike the spring of 1899, and Mama and I followed into Dawson that fall. We landed in the steamer Willie Irvin, and when it returned to White Horse, a big hunk of ice got under it, and it capsized. In 1901, my brother was born in and Austin, and then in 1906 they had a fire in Fairbanks here, and the business was waning in Dawson, so Pa came to Dawson, came to Fairbanks in the spring of 1906, and Mama, Rhodey and I followed in the fall. I graduated from the Fairbanks High School in 1917. There was four of us, and the first graduation was 1913, and one year they had two graduates. But I am here to be interviewed on the now present University of Alaska, and that is the main thing, but I give my background. The university was built the summer of 1917, and the first building in this vicinity of a concrete foundation, and I helped to do the electric wiring in Dr. Bunnell's home, which now has been moved. In the days of the territory, we had the marshal's office, judiciary system, as well as the post office. And when politics changed in Washington, D.C., everybody was dismissed from the janitor on up. And I think in 1911, they had a Democrat convention in Cordova, and they elected C.E. Bunnell to run against Wickersham, a Republican. And he was in Valdez then as a speaker. How should this be, up or down?
Yeah, it's recorded.
And that is the way, and he ran, and ordinarily he was defeated, but at the same time Woodrow Wilson was elected president, and to put oil on troubled waters, they had Mr. Bunnell appointed as judgeship as of the 4th Divisional Division. And he came to Fairbanks. I remember him when he was stumping, and he talked about his days in school where he was waiting on the table and worked his way through university and then teaching school and practicing law during the summer vacation, and then him coming to Fairbanks, and he always stayed at the Nordale Hotel. In fact, all Democrats did, as it was a hotbed for Democrats. And he got the judgeship, and I think that was around 1912, and
1915.
Oh, well, 1915, and then he did serve until President Harding got in power. Then all of them went out, and all Republicans went in from the janitor on up. And at that time, the our Alaska Agriculture and College School of Mine had been dormant. The building sometimes had a janitor and sometimes did not. But they got together to open it in 1922. I forget all of the trustees then, but Mr. Rickard wanted to appoint an M.D. Snodgrass, a farmer, for president, and Mr. Stevens, being a lawyer and the head of the trustee, quoted such and such a law and said they could not appoint one of their own members as a president, and as a result, Mr. Bunnell got the job. And the school opened in 1922, and they were short of funds, and all big boxes were used for a desk, and small boxes were used for chairs.
Now, let's talk just a little bit about that part there. I'm glad to know that there had been some people that wanted Snodgrass as president, but that's right. He was a member of the trustees himself,
and it
wouldn't have looked quite right in that case. Now, I think we're particularly interested in your family, and especially now you mentioned that you had a brother born in Dawson in 1901, and that was Roden, was it?
Yeah.
Now, Roden has the distinction, you know, of being the first student to sign the book out here.
Yes.
Could you tell us a little bit about Roden, maybe just how come he decided to come to college? Did he finish high school in town here? What did he decide to study? And a few things about it in that regard.
Well, he was my brother, but to know him and know me, I sometime had a fight on my hand because I said he was a brother because he was dramatically inclined and up forth in everything, and I stammered then. And as a result, I was always behind the scene and roadie this and roadie that. And he graduated from the Fairbanks High School, 1920. I think there's eight of them. And the school opened in 1922, and he was the first to register. And at that time, there's just a wagon road to the university. Most of the people coming out here came by the train. They had a special car, but however, Miss Burrell was Dr. Bunnell's secretary, and on the day of opening the school, Miss Burrell and Rodin, they walked the ties so they could be here early. And there was a one-story building there with a boiler and a steam plant underneath, where Mr. Sullivan operated it, and he had living quarters for him and his wife, and they burned coal. It was a 50 horsepower boiler, and they had an auxiliary plant they wanted to run, but they had trouble, and they asked me to come out to look it over, and I told them there was a short in the armature, and that was it. But it opened up, and they had these boxes for furniture, and Bunnell was a hard-working man. He was a fiend for work, and like Morton E. Stevens said, he came here as a poor lawyer, but my, how that man did work. And when he resigned, he was a good lawyer. He was a fiend for work. And that, the first graduation was in 1923. John Shanley, he had spent 3 years at the Cornell University and put in his 4 years here, the last year here. The first year, Dr. Bunnell lived at his home on 8th and Lacey. It's still there. And his daughter was about 6 or 8 and was in the room of Mrs. Tupper, little bit of a girl. In the first year, Dr. Bunnell stayed on 8th and Lacey, and he sometime took the car out, but most of the time he would walk. Often I had to go to work at 6 a.m. and I'd see him and other faculties walking to the university. And they had it hard, but they all had 100% spirit.
Do you recall anything about these particular ones of interest now? The first regents are here, and the first faculty now is here. Now, of course, Bunnell, and then there was Clint Morgan.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Kirkpatrick.
Yeah.
And Herbert Bruce.
Yeah.
Archie Truesdell.
Yeah.
Ernest Patty and Earl Pilgrim. Now, did you know any of those particularly well, or remember anything about them?
Well,
of course, we all know Patty.
But I knew I'll try to answer it. Was it as far as Mr. Morgan? I knew him. He was a farmer, and he dwelt on farmer, and he built a log house down on the flat here, and it's now occupied by Mr. Huber, who is now instructor at the Lathrop School. And this Elizabeth Kirkpatrick was here 1 year, and she did leave Fairbanks and did marry a man, I forget his name, and she was sick, and I think she died around Los Angeles, rather 1929. My dad and brother went to Los Angeles, tried to look her up, but they couldn't. But this Mr. Bruce, I knew him. He was a forward man. He was sharp and blunt. He told Rodin that a student like him wouldn't be allowed on the campus in the States.
How long did Rodin attend?
1 year.
Just the 1 year.
Yeah.
What line of work did he go into? I remember he just died here maybe about 6 or 8 years ago.
I got tired of playing Sunday school boy, and I knew he's going to fail, so I talked about going to the Bless Electrical School in Washington, D.C., and then I also talked of Roden taking my job at the NC power plant, and it went over as well as the chief engineer of the NC plant, so in September, Roden took my job at the NC plant, and I went to the States, and Roden has followed a power plant engineering. He stayed with the FE until around until around 1926, when the Fairbanks Exploration Company started and sent for him, and he was engineer, shift engineer, until around 1940, when he was sent to Ladd Field as an engineer, and in February 1951, he dropped dead on the job.
Is it that long ago?
If he had lived 6 weeks longer, he'd have been exactly 50 years old. He got married, had 3 children, and they're all in Jacksonville, Florida now. And Roden was active. He was a good boy. Anything else you want to
know? No, I think that's fine, but I like to have the story. I remember that he was working at the power plant at Ladd Field when he died, but I didn't realize it was that long ago.
Yeah,
19 years ago.
In February 1951.
Well, I remember that.
And he had a Masonic funeral.
And are his children, they're all grown now.
If Roden had lived, he'd have had 8 grandchildren now. Mm-hmm. I'm corresponding with 2 of them. Mm-hmm. And that is it. And I'd like the university alumni to go purchase Bunnell's home on 8th and Lacey there and make it as a memorial.
Well, that's an idea. How do you recall how long he lived there? Did he live there when he was judge,
suppose? Yeah, you said, I think he took it over 1914, and he did live there until...
He didn't build the house.
No, he
did. It had been there.
Yeah, somebody else.
Who has lived there since? Have you any idea?
Oh, they've had a sign up for rent and then for sale. And I've been in the house. At one time I was a meter man for the NC, and at that time electricity wasn't advanced like it is now, and they had the meter inside the house, and you have to rap to get in to read the meter. And when they found out how much the bill was, 30 cents a kilowatt and $1 a month rent for the meter, often I was lucky to get out of the house alive.
It used to run pretty high. Well,
yeah,
it's still high, but
yeah,
in those days, I guess, quite a bit worse.
But everything was wood there. Everything was wood, $8 a cord. And they brought in the coal around 1922, and that the first janitor they had was Mr. Sturgill.
This is out at the college now.
Yes, out of the college, and several times Mr. Sturgill would be busy at something else, and Mr. Bunnell would sweep out the whole building.
Yeah.
He was a worker
from
way back.
Morning, Do you recall during his judge days the general feeling about town, whether he was respected as being a fair and honest man and that sort of thing? You were quite a young man,
15,
of course.
I was 21 and didn't follow, but I heard them say that all of his decision that was taken to the Court of Appeals was reversed.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know much about law, although I did attend some cases. And in them days, they had what you call a floating court.
Yeah.
They would all get on a boat here and go to Flat Diderot and so on, and would hold court.
What time of year about would that be?
In summertime.
Yeah.
We had at them days 5 months river transportation, 7 months winter. Of water transportation, and they generally leave on the first boat and come back in the early fall. And the last boat would leave here around October 1st to go to Whitehorse, although some would leave later, but it was a chance. It was risky.
Do you recall now, when he was in town, did he join the Masons order here, or had he joined the Masonic Lodge in Valdez? Or do you remember?
Valdez, yes. He was a Valdez Mason. I'm a Mason, too.
Yes. Well,
he attended Lodge once in a great while.
Yeah.
And he always attended when the Grand Master came here and was always asked to talk, because we gave a banquet. Bonnell had a magnetic way of talking. He had a way of keeping you spellbound and getting across what he said. And he's a very good talker, a very good man to talk to, although he wasn't wishy-washy.
Yeah. Now, do you recall you've heard Wickersham speak many times.
Yeah.
How would you compare Bonnell as a speaker and Wickersham?
Oh, I would say that Bonnell was more smooth, more suave.
Yeah.
Wickersham was more blunt.
He was a kind of a old school.
He was blunt. He would call an ace
blood
and
thunder.
A space and spade, whereas Bonnell was more suave.
Yeah.
Rather, Bonnell was more civilized, what do you call it? Bonnell had a university diploma, and Wickersham, I don't think, went beyond the eighth grade, but he studied law in them days was different than it is now. Like Warren Taylor, got out of the army. He worked as fireman on the Copper River Railroad, and at nighttime studied law, and is still now one of the leading lawyers in Fairbanks.
Do you recall? Now there was, of course, bad blood between Wickersham and Bonnell. It started, I suppose, because they were on political opposite sides of the fence. And, of course, it was Wickersham prevented him from being, the Senate has to kind of confirm appointments. Well, Bonnell served one four-year term, and then when he was up for a renomination, Wickersham brought charges against him. And he was never confirmed. He served 3 years by recess appointments for the last 3 years of his judge. But of course, he was accused of political activity by Wickersham, but it was never really substantiated. Here's our photographer boy, so let's stop just a moment.
As one thing is, Wickersham came in the fall to promote himself against Bonnell, and he says that Bonnell is a blame good Democrat because he was once a Republican. And he talked and says he just changed his politics, which isn't right at all, but he's a good Democrat because he got some good ground with the Republican Party. And of course, Bunnell tried to answer that. It was hard.
Well, it is, but of course, you know, Wickersham himself kind of switched parties around there. You know? First he was a progressive, and then he run as an independent, and then he became a Democrat, you know. And, well, he was endorsed, didn't he?
I know that Bunnell belonged to the A.B. Lodge, and that is extinct now.
Yeah. You think you got enough there now? Maybe one more we can be looking at the first. Yeah. This is the first bulletin, by the way.
Yeah.
And
I have talked about these two here. Earl Pilgrim, Ernest Patti, I know him.
Yeah.
He was graduate of the University of Washington.
Right.
And he came here, I believe, right after World War I, as well as Earl Pilgrim. Pilgrim had a commission in the Army and was there as an instructor.
Yeah, that's good. Now, you want to get to a single of him? One close-up. All right. You want to put the glasses down or leave them on your head?
I leave them on my head.
That's characteristic. That's a good one.
If these turn out any good, I'd like one of them.
I have my desk there with the, maybe the... I don't know if you can get the back.
May I use your comb?
You yeah, I should say. let's do it just as me kinda looking up here from my manuscript. You see, I'm working on this manuscript. I'll be gone for several days here, but I'll check in with you maybe in a week or so, huh? I'm going to catch a can tomorrow, but I won't be back. I'll be back next Monday. You won't be gone too long.
No, I'm going
up
for...
Who are you? Oh, well, we'll turn those over to somebody else. Then. Who's going to...
I'll check with Rich.
Yeah. And thanks a lot, and have a good trip.
I'll tell you, and hope you...
Are you going to school or something?
I was going down to work in January.
Picture I had taken with Bob Bloom.
Yeah.
See? Mm-hmm. And then this is the picture that I had taken with Earl Pilgrim.
Yeah.
You see? So as many of the old timers that I get, that I can get a picture of the people I'm interviewing, it'll add a little interest, you see.
Eva McGowan will be good too, yeah.
Yeah, I'll probably see it.
you'll have a whole lot of duplication, but still someone will spill something.
Okay, that I'll check in then with Rob.
Hey, you mentioned about Bob Blome. Did you ever learn how Eva McGowan came to Fairbanks?
No, never did.
Well,
from the women's club, and it was my tape recorder. So everybody has their little skeletons in the closet, I suppose, if anybody wants to go digging deep.
Like me, and I said, where did you get that? It happened in 1915, but he wouldn't tell me. One that it wouldn't go any farther, that the university wouldn't go any farther, but it did.
Yeah, that was Yeah, 16th or so of September, all right, 1970. And we're out here at the university in the new museum building, and I'm having a tape interview with Frank P. Young. Frank's an old-timer here. First, I'm going to ask him to answer a few questions about himself, and then we're going to start talking about some of his recollections and memories of the days in Fairbanks, particularly when Judge Bunnell was on the bench from 1914 till 1921. So, Frank, I'm glad to have you here, and you know, I never did get all straightened out as to just where were you born now? Just
Seattle, Washington.
You were born in Seattle, and you were just a boy when you came up north with your parents?
3 years old, come to June of 1996.
96. Now, did you stay in Juneau long, Frank?
I think 2 years.
You were just a little fellow then. Yeah. How old did you say you were?
Well, 3 years old.
Just 3 years old.
Yeah.
So you don't have many
recollections
of Juneau at all in that.
No, only stories my dad used to tell me about the early days.
Yeah.
Joe Juneau and Harris and all that bunch. He was a young man.
Yeah, in 1886, he'd have been right there.
Oh, sure, he knew them all. Yeah.
Well, now, from there, then, what did your dad follow a trade of some kind? Did he?
Yeah, my father was, he was in the restaurant business. He was in the restaurant business, and we left Juneau in 1898 and went into to Skagway, and we stayed there till 99 to go over the...
Those were... Interesting. Were they building the railroad during that year,
yeah,
or had they started it
yet? Yeah, it started in 99.
About 99.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so he did he operate a little restaurant there for a while, or
He worked in the restaurant.
He worked in a restaurant.
Yeah. But
was there other members? Were you the only child, or did you have brother or sister?
I had one sister.
One sister with you. And then you how did you come in then to the interior?
We come up over Chilkoot Pass.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. In the spring of 99.
Is that right?
Yeah, and we made the trip like all the rest of Stampeders. You know, my mother was a young woman, 20 years old.
Oh.
I was just a kid, five or six or more years. And my sister, then there was, I had another sister born in Skagway.
I see.
And we come in Dawson there and...
Did you walk the whole way, Frank, or did you catch rafts or riverboats along the lakes or so? Is that?
Oh, I didn't walk though. No. My father had a boat that they'd made.
Yeah.
Whipsawed the lumber there at Lake Bennett.
At Lake Bennett, and you'd cross Lake Bennett, and then there was another little portage of some kind. And was there another lakes that you'd hit there? Or?
Oh, there was several lakes. Several lakes that we. we hit there until we got into the Yukon.
Yeah.
Or the 30-mile river, now I think they call it the Yukon now.
Yeah.
And then on down to Dawson.
Yeah. Did you stay in Dawson any length of time?
Oh, yeah. We was there several years.
Uh-huh.
We stayed in Dawson until 1904.
Yeah. And then you were there, of course. Well, you were just a boy then. How old in Dawson?
Let's see. About 12.
About 12. So you can remember pretty well.
Oh, yeah, I can
those
remember.
Events. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, then news of the Fairbanks discovery, I suppose, hit Dawson like all kinds of excitement, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And how did you come over then from Dawson? Did you come over in the summertime or?
Yeah, we come in the fall.
In the fall, the river still open and all?
Yeah, my father went in and come here in 1904, and then he come back and got us, got the family.
Yeah.
Brought us down in the fall of 1905.
Then did he engage in did he get a job then in restaurant work, or did he go try mining, or what did he do during that?
He opened a restaurant here with a fellow by the name of Harry Bentley. You know the Bentley boys?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, there was Bentley and Young had the old.
What was your father's first name?
Frank.
Was it Frank too?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Frank A.
Yeah. And where was that located about? Could you pick out the spot approximately?
Yeah, it was located just down on First Avenue, where right across the street from the USO, that'd be First Avenue.
Yeah.
Right in there.
Yeah. Now, what year did you say that would have been?
1905.
Yeah, 1905. Well, then. Yeah. You were here then for the big fire of 1906, huh?
Oh yeah, you bet. I seen that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I seen the old Lottie Talbot burn up right at the river and sink.
That was one of the river boats, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Lottie Talbot.
One of the big ones.
Was that the same day or?
Yeah, the same day, the day of the fire.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Now, was that the day they tell about that the NC Company were trying to keep up the water pressure? And then they found this damn bacon out back in the storehouse, and they said, by golly, we got to keep up the steam pressure in the boilers, and they threw in the bacon.
That's right.
That's right.
Yeah,
good,
sure. Yeah. They threw in the bacon and hams that they had there to try to burn this half green wood to keep up steam. The whole town was burning up what there was of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
So, well, I might even make a little note of that in my book, because that was a kind of an important day in the history of Fairbanks, too,
was,
you know.
Yeah.
Well, no, I don't want to take up too much of your time. Now, did you go to school here, Frank? Did you attend classes, or did you decide that you'd had enough education?
No, I went to school.
Yeah?
I went to the first school in Fairbanks, an old-timer, Charlie Kramer, and let's see who's left of the old bunch. There isn't very many.
No, I bet not.
No, that was that first school started in 1905. It was just probably a dozen pupils.
Yeah, I imagine that's right.
Yeah.
It was, because after all, it was not a town of families so much as a kind of stampeders that were in here, I guess.
Yeah, that's right.
For the most part.
Yeah.
Well, where did you live at that time? Did you buy a lot and build then, or did you
my
rent?
My father built the house that you see where you come down to get me today. He built that the original building there in 1905.
1905, and on that same lot, huh?
On that same lot, yeah. He that was the original place. Flood got it here. It's a big flood.
Yeah.
And I had to build it all over again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there part of the old original building still there, or is that all gone now?
It's all gone.
The old part is all gone.
Yeah.
But the house location is the same.
Yeah, house location is the same.
Well, that must be some kind of a record for the same family on the same lot.
Oh, yeah.
For here, 65 years.
Yeah. That's right.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
65 years in 1970. Well, of course, you know my story that I'm particularly interested in. Well, you mentioned that you went to school.
Yeah.
There wasn't a high school started yet, or pretty soon there was a high school started.
Not when I first went to school.
Of course, no. Your education had been pretty erratic anyway.
When I first went to school, no, there was no high school. Not till I think about 3 years later.
Yeah.
Anyway, I graduated from Fairbanks High School in 1910.
Oh, did you?
Oh, yeah.
How could you graduate from high school going to school so little, huh?
Well, I wasn't too little.
How many were in the class, do you recall?
Graduated.
Yeah. That must have been in about the first class or so, wasn't
it? Yeah, it was. I think the first or second. I can't remember. And yeah. I might be mistaken in the year, but I think it was 1910. But I went back to get the records of the deal.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a little diploma on it, and I lost it in the hotel fire. Then I went back later on. I wanted to get the records from the old Fairbanks Public School, and they'd burned up, and the old school burned up.
Oh, sure.
So,
yeah.
Well, it was Leroy Moyer, and let me see. I can't remember. There was a Johnny Parsons. His father was a Presbyterian minister here in them days.
Right.
And I think there was a couple of Kramer girls.
Yeah.
I so many years back.
Oh, yeah, that's a long time.
After losing what I did have a little diploma, you know.
Yeah, that would have been interesting.
Every day. Them years, you know, the teachings of the way they taught you in them days and today, there's no comparison. You know
no.
what I mean? No. No.
No.
No, everything was different.
Yeah. But you had a good education for getting along. I mean,
oh, yeah.
You knew how to read well, and you could do your mathematics, and
sure.
You understood
well. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, moving on. Then, what kind of a job did you get when you get out of high school? Did you ever actually go out in the mines, or did you always find work around town?
No, I went in the mines. I got into the mining. First, I was working down in the hole, hard work, $5 a shift.
That's the salary, going salary, huh?
Yeah.
How long was the shift? Full 8 hours, I suppose?
10 hours.
10 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then I got tending bucket and the bottom of the shaft. And I worked a couple of seasons in that. That's pretty hard go.
It is hard.
And them days, you know, regardless of how good an education you had, why, the employment wasn't there for you, whether
no.
you had a college education or whether you didn't.
No.
You had to do the hard.
It was just hard work was all
yeah,
there was.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
Then I got to mining for myself.
Did you have a little property?
Yeah,
where
yeah.
did you have your
Well, I mined over
claims.
In Vault Creek, and I mined on Lower Gold Stream. Yeah.
Now, were those little one-man operations, or you have a partner? So
no.
Most everyone had to have a partner, didn't you?
Yeah, we had sometimes a 3-4 partner.
Yeah, yeah.
I got into one deal where there was a young woman as a partner. She got into the deal as a cook, and I was kind of a little dubious about it when she come out and volunteered to cook for us,
yeah.
And then finally she got it to be a partnership. We had some pretty good ground.
Yeah.
But we're all young men, and it didn't work out too good.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, that's the way it goes. But at least she was game, you know. She was wanting to be a miner. Well,
yeah.
Now, the thing that I'm
yeah, well, you never asked me if I made any money.
Did you make any money? I didn't know whether that was getting too personal or not.
Oh, no. Well, I'll tell you something. I went in the hole to the NC Company, quite a few $1,000s. And it took me quite a number of years. My first adventure in this ground, the ground was too deep and it was wet. And the bedrock was swelling, you know, swelling bedrock. And it snapped these timbers just like toothpicks sometimes, you see.
Oh,
hard
boy.
Ground to work.
Yeah.
And anyway, we went in the hole. We finally had to close up the deal. And I was $8,000 or $9,000 in the hole at the NC, and it took me years to pay him back, but I paid him back every dollar of it.
Is that right?
Yeah. And then I got into another one down on Gold Stream, Lower Gold Stream there. I made a little money there.
Did you?
I made a few $1,000.
Yeah. Well, was that the common practice now? Was the NC the biggest grub staker of the bunch?
Oh, yeah, yeah. They were the big...
Yeah. You'd go in and show them, maybe tell them about your ground, and if they knew you, they'd kind of grub stake you for that. Not only for the food, but the equipment, I suppose, and your clothes and all the junk that's necessary. Sure. Did they charge, do you recall, any fixed rate of interest on their money?
Not to my knowledge. I can't remember that. It was just a bill. No interest, no.
You don't recall them, no?
No.
No. Of course, the price was probably high enough to begin with, but then...
No, everything was way down then.
Well, relatively, yeah.
A dollar was a dollar then.
Yeah.
You know, it isn't like it is now.
Mm-hmm.
You'll say you bought an outfit for $200 or $300, you'd have quite a little grub stake.
Yeah.
Yeah. But not today.
No.
Well,
Now the period that I'm interested in at the moment now, of course. Of course, you knew Wickersham when he got here in the early days, and then he would. You practiced law here for, he resigned his judgeship about 1907 to run for delegate. That's, I mean, this is according to his book I just read, you know, in Old Yukon.
Yeah.
And then he ran against, the first time there was a delegate to Congress was in 1906. You elected Waskey and Cale.
Yeah.
And Waskey served for part of the unfinished term, a short term they called it, and then Cale went back. Did you know Tom Cale?
Sure.
And he went back and he served for two sessions back there as a delegate to Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And according to Wickersham, he decided that he wasn't going to run again. And it might have been pretty much of a strain on Tom Cale, unless he was an extraordinary man to...
Mm-hmm.
But at any rate, Wickersham, he didn't run again, and Wickersham filed and got elected quite handsomely because he was so well known here and in Nome and even around. And then he got elected again in 1906, he got, or in 8, and again in 1910, again in 1912.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 1914, he ran again, and this time, all over the territory, there was a little bit of a little regeneration of some interest there. The Democrats, though, were still pretty badly divided. Part of them called themselves Progressive Democrats, held a convention in Anchorage, I mean in Valdez, and they decided that they'd support Wickersham. Then a whole bunch of them up here, including Gostad E.B. Collins and some of the others, they filed as nonpartisans.
Mm-hmm.
And they got elected pretty handsomely as nonpartisans.
Yeah.
So the Democratic Party, as it in itself, was in pretty bad shape because they were all splintered, and half of them were nonpartisans, and a bunch more of them were these progressive Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at any rate, they held this convention in Skagway, and Bunnell went down as a delegate from Valdez. And by golly, he wound up with the nomination. And so he and Wickersham then had about 3 months or so to campaign. And I've got this pretty well because I looked in all the old newspapers and stuff, so we got that all right. Anyway, Wickersham beat him pretty bad. Good substantial vote. I think he won in all the divisions. Some cities voted against him down, but the big overall, I think he won in all the divisions. Well, then Bunnell got nominated and appointed judge of the district court for the 4th Division. And I think Judge Fuller, I think it was, had resigned and went outside. Do you know anything about Fuller? Do you know any reason why he resigned?
I think, if I can remember, it was due to ill health.
I think so, too. It sounded pretty much that way. Yeah.
Yeah, I knew Fuller, sure.
Yeah. Well, then that's the point where I am now, and I thought that you could clue me in on just some big general ideas of the years 1914 to 21 when Bunnell was the judge. Now, you say you worked as a deputy marshal.
Mm-hmm.
You recall what year that was, Frank?
I think it was 1915.
Almost right away, huh?
Well,
he took office, you see, right in the beginning of January or so of 1915.
Bunnell. Yeah, well, I think I was already established in the marshal's office with Irwin.
Now, that was W.T. Irwin? Or
L.T. L.T. Irwin, yeah. That was a presidential appointment.
That's right, as a marshal.
Yeah.
You know, I was looked up today, and I don't have the note with me, but the presidential appointments were the judge and the district attorney and the marshal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just about then the others were...
And the postmaster.
And the postmaster. Yeah, well, do you recall now when Bunnell arrived to become judge? Was there anything of interest going on there? Was there quite a bit of excitement? Of course, he'd been up here campaigning a few months before,
yeah.
So he had some acquaintances here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, now, as near as I can remember on this Bunnell's arrival here as judge, they give him a little reception. A big reception, the people in town, or the Democratic Party, I can't remember now, it was the Democratic Party, I think it was the Democratic Party,
yeah.
He runs as a Democrat.
Oh yeah,
the Democratic Party gave the judge a nice little send-off when he arrived,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was hell.
I see mentioned in the old papers of a place called the Auditorium. Where would that have been?
That's where it was.
Mm-hmm.
The Auditorium, well, was the old Moose Hall, now located on...
is that the same one?
Yeah, it's the same one.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, on Second Avenue.
I see that they're, you know, in the old newspapers, they mention that there's going to be a big do at their dance and reception at the Auditorium.
Yeah.
And where was Harmony Hall? Harmonie.
Well, it was on Third Avenue, and it was the other side of Noble Street. And it was the Harmony Hall was a not too big a hall. It was maintained by the Harmony Society, which was sponsored by a local German organization.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, yeah, all German.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, yeah, they'd get down there and sing and drink.
Yeah,
I used to play piano and on an orchestra there.
Years.
It was all orchestration, reading music, you see.
Yeah.
And hell, they'd have the damn steins of beer lugged up all over the damn pianos. I couldn't hardly. Lots of fancy food, you know.
They
put up the, big platters of hamburger all dolled up with something, you know, rye bread and big.
I didn't know there was a kind of a German colony.
Oh, yeah, German
quite a,
colony.
Quite a bunch, yeah.
I think I have some pictures of the old Harmony Society.
Yeah, that'd be, well, I saw that name, you know, because once in a while they'd rent the hall for a political conclave rally or something, and I see that name.
It was
name.
A nice little hall.
Sure.
It wasn't a big one.
Yeah.
It had a nice dance.
Now, in those days, of course, they used to have the court pretty much the same as they do now with bringing in the culprits and so forth. But in general, do you recall, did Bunnell get a reputation of being a fair judge or a harsh judge or a prejudiced judge? Or do you recall kind of over the years what the general feeling was?
Well, no, Judge Bunnell in them days, he was very well liked by the public in general, you know what I mean? He was an honest individual in his dealings.
Yeah.
But in them years, and at the present time, the ways of life in regards to law and order was a lot different, see what I mean?
Yeah?
Yeah. Now,
there was frontier justice, of course.
Damn right. No, what I'm getting at is, I know a married man that waited for a girl and raped her. He was a married man. By God, they give him 15 years, and he, 15 years, old Bunnell, he wrapped it to him.
He just slapped it on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And, well, law and order in them years was something like the days of the Northwest Mounted Police.
Yeah.
You know, they'd always get them. No,
yeah.
They were.
There was none of this here dilly-dallying around and reprieves and coming back and mistrials and all that.
No, hell no.
They'd slap the book at him and get it over with.
That's right.
Yeah,
Bunnell, he sent three men to hang here.
Do you recall those cases at all?
Oh, sure.
Well, can you expand a little? What were they murderers? Is this the only thing?
Yeah, the first one that was tried in front of Bunnell for murder was, he was a Montenegrin by the name of Milo Segura.
Yeah, and he was charged with murder of whom that he was supposed to murder, do you recall?
He murdered a mine owner down Iditarod by the name of Riley, William Riley. And he was convicted of premeditated murder. He waited for this fellow to come along the trail. He shot him in the back, killed him.
Is that right? There was no question about that.
No.
He was had laid for him along the trail, and it was an old grievance over something.
Well, it was over. This guy was cutting wood for Riley.
Uh huh.
He was a woodcutter, and they had some kind of an argument about pay and don't pay. You know what I mean? This guy claimed that Riley owed him. Riley said he paid him.
Yeah, that sort of thing.
But they waited and shot him and killed him in the back.
Yeah.
Shot him in the back.
Shot him in the back. Okay, that takes care of one. Do you recall what are the other cases?
Yeah, this fellow was in jail a year and a half before they hung him.
Uh-huh.
He educated himself in there by reading books and learned to run a typewriter. And he had some money when he was in there. He made, and then this Montenegrin society around here, or his countrymen, they all kind of put in for his defense for a new trial and all this. But I think he did have an appeal on it, but an appeal was turned down by the Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco.
Uh-huh.
And that's as far as them days.
It would ever go, yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
So anyway, when he got ready to hang him, he bought a new suit of clothes and everything, and they brought him out. They say taking him out of the cell, walking. Maybe you don't want to hear him.
Yeah, I do.
Why, he bid goodbye to the boys in the back part there, just like he was taking a trip on a boat or something,
yeah.
You know. He was all dressed up for this, hanging.
Yeah.
And when they got him up on the scaffold, well, he wouldn't stand up.
Mm.
And they had to strap him to a board, you know.
Yeah.
And they dropped him and broke his neck, took him 3 minutes for his heart to stop beating.
Is that right?
Yeah, I was the first.
You were a witness, were you, Frank?
Yes, I was.
Well, you were there in an official capacity,
yeah,
as a deputy marshal?
Yes, I was.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it took about three minutes. A doctor there with a stethoscope.
Dead, yeah,
yeah.
Dr. Sutherland.
Yeah.
Still has his name on the part of an old concrete walk on the
road.
Oh,
yeah, he was an old-time doctor, yeah. Now, what the execution took place, did they build a scaffold especially for the purpose, or did they have
right one? Adjacent to the old courthouse, there was the old Fairbanks Banking Company building.
Uh-huh.
And that bank went defunct, and the building was vacant, and the upstairs part was vacant during this time. So they just put a hallway through from one building to the other, and then they just cut out a trap door on the second floor and put some 2x10s, you know, up the sides and across for the rope, and just stood him on this trap door, and when
pulled the trap door, let him fall between the two buildings.
That's right.
That's a good, efficient way to do it. Mm-hmm. Was that the first hanging in Fairbanks that
yes.
you know of?
Yeah, that's
that
right.
That was the first one.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you don't recall what year that was or anything. I can look it up in the papers if I had approximately about.
Yeah.
Was it long after Bunnell was here?
Bunnell had been judged then, I think, 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, it was probably along 1617.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Well, do you remember anything about the others?
Yeah.
Yeah, what is the second one that you recall?
Well, this old fellow, I have all the history of this. He was a native from Shaglock Slough down here. And he had another cousin or some relation of his that had a rather nice looking wife.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy come infatuated with her, and whenever this fellow would go out on the trap line, he'd kind of move in, I guess.
Yeah.
So anyway, he killed him, and he disemboweled him.
Now, who killed who now? The guy that was making love to this other guy's wife.
Yeah.
He waited till the husband came home and killed the husband, is that
That's
it?
That's right.
Uh-huh.
He killed him.
Yeah.
And this woman wanted him to, he said,
yeah.
at the trial.
Uh-huh.
And, but I was going to tell you, he disemboweled him and he sewed a big rock up in his stomach, you know. And
is that right?
Sewed him up with a skin needle, you know.
Yeah.
And this Indian did.
Yeah.
And threw him in Shaglock Slough.
Where is Shaglock Slough, do you recall?
Yes, down between Iditarod and
it's down in the Iditarod country.
Oh, yeah,
flat,
yeah.
Oh, I see.
Well,
is that right? And you put him in the river, huh?
And
with
put him in the river,
that.
And then yeah, and then. Seems about a week later, the babish started to rock or some such a thing, and the rock fell out, and the guy floated.
Uh-oh.
And, anyway, to make a long story short, why, it got out that this guy had killed him, or she told on him, or something else, I can't recall.
Yeah.
But I have the story on at home.
Right.
I'll give it to you if you want.
Yeah, I'd like to see it.
Yeah. Now, he was sentenced by Bunnell to hang.
Uh-huh. Were there, of course, there were no witnesses or so there. It was pretty good circumstantial evidence, or did the guy confess?
He confessed.
He confessed, uh-huh.
Said he was sorry.
Yeah.
But sorry or no sorry, in them days, law was law.
Yeah, sure, that's an old.
But anyway, what I was going to tell you now, I don't know.
He sentenced him to hang, huh?
Yeah, he did hang.
He
but
did.
Do you want to hear a little details of the hanging?
Sure. This is just between you and I. I don't have to print it, you know.
If you print it, they'll think, gee, this Young's a tough character.
A real tough one.
Yeah, well, now here's the story. This old Indian, he has a fancy name. I can't remember his name. But before they got ready to hang him, the chief deputy, his name was Miller, he said to me, you tell him, or this interpreter, Mrs. Callahan, that was old Dan Callahan's wife, says, you, this Indian couldn't talk no English.
Uh-huh.
Says, you tell him when he wants a drink of whiskey, he can have it. This was about an hour before the hanging.
Uh-huh.
So I told Mrs. Callahan, and she talked to him. He says he'll take a drink right now. So I went in and got this whiskey. We had whiskey in the jail there we used to keep for old sickness and whatnot.
Yeah.
And I poured him out a water glass, pretty near full, one of them big water glasses, you know, good sized water glass. By God, he downed the whole chicarucas just like you'd take a drink of water. This fellow Miller, he says to me, you tell her he can have another one whenever he wants it. So I told her, the chief says he can have another one whenever he wants it. And she talked to him, you know, in this lingo. And she turned around and she said to me, he said he'd take it now.
Before it's too late.
Well, he downed 2 water glasses of booze, and he was really polluted. He started to do the hoot, the Indian dance, or Indian song, and whatnot. Yeah. But anyway, took him out and hung him. But here's the rest of the story. I was standing under the scaffold with this Dr. Sutherland.
Yeah?
Yeah. There was another chief deputy. He was upstairs, and I was just this doctor and I underneath there. And down comes this guy. And his head lit right at my feet. And all the blood in the body, just like you'd dump a gallon and break the gallon jug of water, whatever it is, on the floor, just spill right out. I looked at the, I said, there wasn't a stain on the rope, no place. It was just, you know,
his
neck was just severed, just like
it was. It just decapitated it.
Yeah, so I said to the doctor, I said, the hell come off here anyway? He said, oh, he says, syphilis. He said, softening the bone. I didn't say nothing. I just took it all in. But the deal was, I figured he weighed 180 pounds. They dropped him 10 feet. They just yanked the head right off.
Yeah.
See?
Sure.
That was it.
Yeah, the fall didn't break the neck. It just, with the rope size and all, it just cut the neck off.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Well,
that's pretty gruesome. There's no question about
gruesome.
That.
Well, in those days, I was the youngest one of the bunch, you know, and they put all the fancy work on me.
Yeah.
I resented some of it, and I thought, if I ever get the hell out of here, I'll...
Yeah, this is not my kind of work, I don't think.
No, but...
You recall the third? Was there any more on the second one now?
On the second one.
Well, then, no. Well, what about the third? Do you recall what the third one was?
Yeah.
What was he charged with? Murder again, I suppose?
This is another Indian from down around Big River in the Kuskokwim. I used to call him Little Johnny when I...
Well, we've got it on tape here. I just like to follow it in a few notes as I go along. And what was, who did he kill and how did he get apprehended? Do you recall?
Yeah, it was a drunken ball, just a drunken ball. They're drinking, these Indians down there, and they got into some kind of a mix-up over some skins they'd been out ratting together. And then when he was in high key, real mad, he just grabbed a rifle and shot him, killed him.
Uh-huh.
But they were drinking, see?
Yeah.
Now, let me tell you a little something. Now, this is between you and I. I don't want this to go no further. I figure I'm a really bad man in my days.
Yeah. Shall I shut it off here?
No, you can suit
right.
yourself.
Right.
It might be interesting to have some of it. I had a couple of trustees upstairs one time. This is before this hanging.
Mm-hmm.
They used to take the old boys up there. It was an old log building. Just take them up there and take a bath. Yeah, we had a bathroom up there.
Yeah.
I had one of them up there one time cleaning the windows. And he come downstairs where I was and he said, say, that thing is ready to fall out. I said, what are you talking about? Well, you know, now, out of logs, you see, there's a 2x8 nailed up against the logs all around the windowsill, see?
Yeah.
Well, it might have been a 4x8, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where these bars could go into it, or they'd have another frame made of, you know, solid steel or whatever it was, go inside of that. Then the bars went inside of that, but the bars was hooked to this other frame, the solid frame, and they was nailed into this 4x10 or whatever it was that was sitting in, see?
Yeah.
Now, some other guy got in there, and he took a hacksaw, and he hacksawed that whole thing all the way around in big... spikes that was in there.
Yeah.
And this guy said, well, here, look at here, you can take this out and set it on the floor. I said, well, put it back, just leave it alone. And this was, I don't know, about a week before they hung this guy.
Mm-hmm.
So this little Johnny was a hell of a nice guy, but he got religious, you see.
Yeah.
So I said to him one day, Johnny, I said, you know they're going to hang you? He said, yeah. I said, would you like to get out of here? He slip it.
Mm-hmm.
I said, no, I don't want to get up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether I would have told him how to get out or not, but
yeah.
Just the same, you know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, he just one of these deals, just
yeah.
a drunken mix-up.
Yeah.
I felt sorry for the little guy.
Yeah. Know?
You want to get out? He said, no, I don't want to get out. I want to pay for my sins.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I knew where I could tell him, you know, but
yeah.
I never did.
Yeah.
I said, well, how to get out?
Yeah.
Just set that thing down. Now, and he was out, see
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
But that was the third guy down.
Yeah. But this went off a little better, I suppose. No.
Oh, yeah, this went
no,
off. No,
no,
no, they didn't.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
dropped this guy all right. But the
yeah.
other big fella,
yeah.
it was just...
Yeah.
No, I've
well, was there was in general the people of the community at that time were, as I say, frontier people, and justice was understood to be rather swift, and there was no animosity built up against Bunnell because of his severe
no,
sentencing.
No.
No. Well, that's what I wanted.
No,
to know.
No.
In general, he was considered a pretty square shooter, I think, as far as. He wasn't being bribed and influenced in this direction or not.
No.
Because, you know, even those years, you see, he finished his four-year term. Those appointments were for 4 years.
Yeah.
So he finished the four-year appointment along, 15 and 4 is 19, about 1919, see. That he would have been up. But ye gods, they didn't relieve him. They wouldn't reconfirm him, because by that time the Republicans were back in power in Washington.
Yeah.
Or at least in the Senate that confirmed the things.
Yeah.
And Wickersham, do you have any idea what Wickersham's charges were against Bunnell that held up his... He never got confirmed for a second term, you
no.
see. He served... 3 more years about
yeah.
on recess appointments.
Yeah.
The president would appoint him on a recess.
No, I can't recall what that
no.
was, but it was big politics.
It was big politics.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
It was just to oust Bunnell out because he was a Democrat.
That's right.
That's all.
And they played it cool and clean in those
oh, yeah.
days.
Oh,
Wango.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
no sentimentality there.
Yeah.
They were. It's ones get out, the others get in, and vice versa. They
yeah.
expected that, I guess.
Now, Bill, getting back to these hangings,
yeah.
I hope that what I said there, I don't want anybody to think I was a desperado or anything
oh,
like
no,
that.
No.
It, my feeling was that I was, I don't know whether I would have told him or not, but I knew. See,
yeah.
But he didn't want to.
No.
He wanted to die, and
no.
he died.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's it. It makes you feel pretty sad, though, doesn't it? You know, when they are really remorseful and they commit a crime when they are out of their minds. I suppose in this day and age, of course, very few states now have the death penalty.
Yeah.
I think they're all gone now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think so. I think their life imprisonment is the maximum. I think now. But it's only been the last few years.
Yeah. Are you
yeah.
sure about that?
Well, if there are any states that still have the capital punishment, it's two or three.
Mm-hmm.
It's very small. And
yeah.
in those the legislation is to get.
I think California has a gas chamber yet.
Yeah, may have, but I think there's big movement to get rid of that.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. Do you recall now when they went on this floating court or so?
Mm-hmm.
They'd go down and they'd hold sessions. Where do you recall that they'd hold session at Ruby?
Yeah.
Where else might they hold a session? Down there.
I did a rod.
Mm-hmm.
And down Bethel, Tuscaloosa.
Would Bethel still in this era?
I think, yeah.
Yeah, I believe it was.
Yeah.
Now, I see that Antioch also had
mm-hmm.
was still
yeah.
in this division, because it kind of went down that direction.
Eagle.
And up at Eagle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They had a regular deputy marshal by the name of Hempel, or was it
temple. I'd have to look it up. Anyway, he was drafted. I was sent down there I wasn't the regular guy. I was with the outfit about a month or something like that when I pulled out.
Mm-hmm.
But I waited till another fella come down by the name of Woods. He was a deputy marshal. Mm-hmm.
Now, Bunnell, as he lived in town there, which house did he live in? Do you recall the Bunnell home in town? Someone told me his house is, the Bunnell house is still in there in town. I think you told me or somebody told me that the Bunnell house is still there, although it's been remodeled and built onto or something. But I don't recall offhand where it is at all.
Well, I'll give me a little piece of paper.
You think about it.
Mm-hmm. I'll get that for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a nice history anyway.
Yeah. I'll just give you a little slip of paper here.
I know where the old Doug Pratt used to live.
Yeah, now, was there any other contacts? Now, you told me, I know, I'm going to shut this off just for a minute because it looks like it's going to come to the end of the reel here.
Can you play any of that back?
Yeah, I can play it back here in just a minute so you can hear how it sounds like. And it's almost right to the end of the thing here now, but I'll...
Yeah.